There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass.
Or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror. Come in. I'd like you to meet some more of our Mystery Playhouse persons, as inhuman as they are. Yes, you've heard the people in on the ground floor? Well, these are folks who normally stay there. I often try to tell them to behave themselves. No, really, I do, but they can't seem to keep their decomposure, huh? Now, you probably don't recognize this lady, but it's Joan of Arc, executed for her beliefs. She wanted a hot dinner for her last supper, but the chef was out, so she had to cook herself, huh? You see, when the judges said her life was at stake, they meant steak well done.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
You know, even in France today, in her honor, she is often toasted, huh? Now, across from her, if you pardon my French, is Florence Nightingale. She wanted to help the soldiers in fortune. Since war is so expensive, she personally helped assist them gain green, huh?
Afraid so.
You know, and now, thanks to their disability, they're all quite wealthy. But none of them are healthy, huh? You see, Miss Nightingale couldn't alleviate the pain, so she amputated it, huh? That's why they called her Nightingale, because she sang like a bird all night amongst their limbs, huh? Just too bad her patients lost their patience with her. When it came time to pin a medal on it, they pinned it through her purple heart. I hope I haven't destroyed tonight's mood, because we're all going to be scared on land, air, and sea. We'll hear from the fall of the House of Usher in the Weird Circle. Then suspense will bring us the log of the Evening Star. But first, it's up, up, and away with Escapes, the long night, so scary!
And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson. Take a deep breath and let it out slowly. And once more. No, this is not a caprice. It is a thoughtful precaution. Fill your lungs well now, for you will be holding your breath for the next 30 minutes as you live through the long night with Frank Lovejoy. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
This is United 404, 10,000 over outer range. Request lower altitude, over.
United 404, this is Rockford Tower. Maintain present altitude until further advised, over.
United 404, roger, Rockford. Over and out.
Rockford Radio, this is Delta 318, over.
Delta
Delta 318, this is Rockford Radio. Go ahead.
Delta 318, request permission to radio approach. I'm over Milford Hills at 4,000. Over.
Delta 318,
you stand in the airport control tower 90 feet up in the sky over Rockford Field waiting to go on the night watch. And you listen to the babble of voices that fill the crowded room in an endless series of requests. Request for altitude change, request for landing permission, request for the weather.
Here is the 9 o'clock weather. Low, stratus clouds over the entire Mississippi Valley, spreading out over the central states. Visibility 2 miles, ceiling 2,200 feet and lowering steadily. Smoke, haze, and fog,
and a ceiling getting lower every minute. You look out through the tinted glass windows into the misty night, and you think of the strangers overhead, in and above the clouds. And you wonder if they too feel the hush as the long night begins. You wonder if the strangers with the throb of engines and the harsh rasp of many voices in their ears can feel the stillness. You look around the tower room, you look and you listen to the voices, and you're glad every time a ship touches down safely on the long, light line runway.
Okay, Brother Ken, you can have it. For me, it's been a long day.
Traffic been heavy?
It started sort of slow, but it's building up. I got 3 converging on the outer marker and 2 inbound on the range. They're all here on the board for you.
Yeah, okay.
They're beginning to stack up over Chicago, but that's their worry.
Yeah, and they can have it.
Yeah. Well, happy landing, man.
Yeah, so long, Charlie.
Nice showing up.
Rockford Tower, this is TWA Flight 70, requesting weather your field. Over.
Hello, TWA 70, this is Rockford. We have stratus clouds, ceiling of 2,000, visibility under 2 miles. Smoke, haze, and fog on the ground. Over.
What is your traffic there, Rockford?
5 inbound inside the 20-mile range, 1 Convair and 2 DC-7s outbound on the red. Over.
Okay, Rockford, this is TWA 70 requesting change of flight plan to land your field instead of Chicago.
Roger, TWA, I'll notify Chicago and clear you in. Give us a call when you pass the Milburn Hills. Rockford out.
Roger, thanks very much.
Give Chicago a call, Mike. Tell them their flight 70 is terminating here.
Okay, Ken, we're doing. Chicago. Rockford Radio.
Rockford Tower. This is Beechcraft Bonanza N91457.
Hello, Beechcraft N91457. This is Rockford Tower.
I've been homing on your range, and apparently my automatic direction finder isn't working right. I think I'm lost.
Stand by, 457. Check the flight file, will you, Mike? See if he's on it.
All right.
Hello, Rockford. Are you hearing me, Rockford? If you are, please give me a call.
This is Rockford. We're reading you fine, Beach. Hold on a second. Find anything on it, Mike?
Nope, there's nothing here, Ken. No flight plan.
Okay. Hello, Beechcraft N91457. This is Rockford Tower. What seems to be the trouble with your ADS?
I don't know exactly, Rockford. I'm not too familiar with this equipment. But I don't think it's working right because I've been changing from one range to another just like I was told to. And I ought to have been somewhere over Minneapolis long ago. And I'm not.
All right, Beechcraft, we'll work something out for you. Where are you flying from?
Indianapolis.
Headed on a direct flight to Minneapolis?
That's right, Rockford. I set my automatic direction finder just exactly the way I was told to when they installed it.
Did you make any visual checks against what your ADF showed?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Did you check your course when you passed over the airways range stations by looking at visual ground objects like signs on the top of oil tanks telling you what city you were over, anything like that?
No, I'm afraid I didn't. I thought my ADF was working, so I didn't think about anything else.
Okay. Now, what was your last known position?
I'm trying to think. I guess the last time I positively knew where I was when I departed Indianapolis.
So what time was that?
About 5:30, maybe 5:45.
5:30? Verify that time. That would be more than 3 hours en route. You should be well out of my range.
Yeah, I know. But I've been circling for more than an hour, trying to make the ADF work and looking for Rockford.
What is your remaining fuel supply?
Well, I guess there's no use kidding myself, but I think I've got about 45 minutes, maybe at the very best, an hour.
Well, here is the situation. The weather here is solid overcast at 600, visibility 1 mile in smoke and haze. Do you see any towns, rivers, highways that you can identify?
No, I can't see anything but clouds. I'm on top.
Holy stuff right here. That light test is good.
Beechcraft, did you say you were on top?
That's right. On top of a solid layer. Have been for a long time.
At what altitude?
I'm at 5,000 indicated. About 1,000 above the clouds.
457, take a good look around you. Are there any breaks in the overcast? Can you see any holes, any thin spots in the area at all?
No. No, it's solid. It's a completely solid layer.
Are you an instrument pilot?
What do you mean?
I mean, are you checked out on instruments? Do you have instrument training?
No. No, I've never been on instruments in my life.
You look at the clock, 9:04. You look at the clock and mentally give yourself 45 minutes. 45 minutes to find him, bring him in, and get him on the ground. You check the latest weather chart and you don't like what you see. Your mouth feels dry. You reach for a cigarette as you punch the mic button and do the next thing that must be done. Rockford Tower to all planes working this frequency. We have an emergency. Repeat, we have an emergency. Please maintain radio silence on this frequency until further notice. Out. Rockford Tower to Beechcraft, N91457. Come in, 457.
Okay, Rockford.
Tell me, how did you get on top?
Well, it was almost clear when I left Indianapolis. I climbed straight out to 5,000, and later, while I was trying to get the ADF working, I found myself on top. It just happened.
Yes, are you familiar with range orientation?
No, I don't know anything about that either. I'm just a businessman with a new airplane. I know only enough about the radio to tune in the station. I know I'm lost, though, and need help. These gas tanks aren't getting any fuller.
Yes, I know, 457. I understand. Sure, you understand, but he doesn't. He knows he's lost and he needs help. He understands that. But he doesn't know what the odds are on getting him straightened out and over the field and then getting him down through that solid layer of clouds. You fight down a sudden urge to push the microphone button and scream at him. To tell him that nobody forced him into an airplane he hardly knew how to fly. Nobody forced him to take off on a long night cross-country in weather suitable only for experienced professionals. But you know there's no time for hindsight. There's hardly any time for hope. So you push the black button and you try to sound calm. Hello, 457. This is Rockford Tower. Now, listen to me carefully. Are you reading me okay?
Yeah. Hello, Rockford. I'm hearing you fine. Loud and clear.
All right. Now I'm going to try to get a fix on you, but before I do, I want you to know what the situation is. I'm sure I can find you. I'm reasonably sure I can get you over the airport before you're out of fuel. I am not sure, though, that we can get you on the ground. Do you understand?
No, I don't understand. I'm lost, and I'm about out of gas, and I don't understand why we're wasting time talking about it. You get me over an airport, and then we'll worry about getting on the ground.
All right, but you understand this. It's my job to help find you. It's my job to help you find the airport, and I'll do everything I can to get you on the ground. But flying that airplane through those clouds will be the hardest thing you've ever done in your life. Do you understand that?
Okay, I understand. Now, what are we going to do?
Now, we're going to orient you by radio and bring you in over the Rockford Airport. I will tell you what must be done, but you have got to do it. I can't fly your airplane for you. Do you understand?
Yeah. Okay, Rockford. I understand.
You know the standard procedures for range orientation. You've run over every step of them a million times for just this kind of emergency. That's one of the reasons you're up here in this modern Tower of Babel on these long nights. But you've got two strikes against you on this one. Time, you read the clock at 9:07, and a fool in an airplane. Mike.
Yeah, Ken.
Get Chicago Control Center on the horn. Ask them to set up an alert of all facilities within 100 miles.
Roger.
Or you better get them to clear all altitudes in the area below 6,000 feet.
Okay, we'll go.
You know, I don't know whether to try to get him down through the clouds now and then try to bring him in, or whether to get him over us on top and then let him down where we won't lose radio contact if he gets too low.
Well, it's souped up all across the valley, Ken. You might get him down for it, but if he's too far out, he'd have no chance of getting here under the city.
Yeah, yeah, and if I don't get him started at something, he'll be out of fuel anyway, and it won't matter. I'm going to bring him in on top.
Okay, I'll check weather very closely, Ken. If I hear of any breaks, I'll give it to you.
Good, thank you. Hello, 457, this is Rockford Tower.
Yeah, okay, Rockford.
I'm going to speak very distinctly, and if you don't understand any part of what I tell you, come in and break me off. It's vital that you understand me. Is that clear?
Yeah, I understand.
Okay. Now, I want you to listen very closely to my range signal. Put everything else out of your mind. Listen and describe exactly what you hear.
Okay. I hear a code sound. Is that the range?
That's right. What does it sound like?
Well, it goes, dodge it.
Okay, 457. Now, is it loud or soft?
It's pretty loud.
Okay, that's the N quadric. Now, I want you to tune to the Madison, Wisconsin range and tell me what you hear.
Okay, wait a minute. Hello, Oxford. I've got the Madison range.
What does it say?
It's just like the other, only backwards. Ta-da.
That's right.
I can hardly hear it, but it's there, all right.
Yeah, okay, 457. That's the A quadrant. Now I want you to try Peoria and then Chicago. Rockford, Madison, Peoria, Chicago. Four corners to check from. Four radio sounds that you hope he's reading correctly. You finish the check and he comes through without a bobble, and you know you have him fixed. You know at least his direction from you. You take a deep breath, and for the first time you feel a tiny flicker of hope that you're going to find your stranger and get him in all right. But you're a long way from home. You light another cigarette and push the black microphone button hard. Now listen carefully, 457. I'm going to run a check procedure on you. I want you to take up a northeast heading, turn your volume down as low as you can, and still receive my range signal. At the very moment you detect a change in signal strength, either higher or lower, advise me.
All right, Rockford. I'll do my best. I'm not at all sure.
Hello, 457. Can you hear me? Do you hear me, Beechcraft, 457?
Rockford. Yes, I read you now. I lost you for a second, but I hear your range signal now.
Did you get all of my last transmission?
Yeah, I think so. I think I can do it. Hello, Rockford. My gauges indicate empty tanks. There's some gas left, I know, but I have no idea how much. Do you know where I am?
I'm quite sure of your direction from me, and I believe I know how far out you are within, say, 20 miles. If what you've told me is correct, I estimate you have 30 minutes fuel remaining. I believe your gauges are indicating normally. Now, try to concentrate on doing just what I've told you to do.
Yeah. Okay, Rockford. I don't want you to think I'm ungrateful. I realize you can't support mistakes. But I can't last much longer. I'm not trying to hurry you, but the gauges stay empty, and my son is getting sick.
You didn't say anything about having any passengers aboard. How many are there of you?
My son and me.
Is the air rough? Is there turbulence?
No turbulence. The air is smooth.
But you said your son is getting sick.
Yes. You see, he's only 9, and he's getting scared. That's what's making him sick.
You don't say anything for a long minute. You just stare out into the miserable night, and your thoughts are not nice. You think of your own kid and you thank God he's home safely in bed. And you know now, if you didn't know it before, that you've got to bring these strangers home. You reach for the microphone button, but before you push it, the voice is back.
What's happened, Rockford? I can't hear you anymore. Did you hear me? I was talking here and you didn't answer. Call Rockford. Come in, please.
I'm reading you. 457, I heard everything you said. Now listen to me carefully. You should be approaching my west course close into the station. I want you to listen closely and describe any change in your signal. I won't call you. You call me when you hear anything change.
Okay, Rockford. Rockford, the signal is much louder now, and I'm getting more of a continuous call in my earphones, although I can still hear that other signal.
All right, 457, that's fine, that's good. Now, listen carefully. Turn your volume down a little more, and when you no longer hear that other signal, and when the continuous tone is loud and clear, and when you hear nothing but the continuous tone, at that time, I want you to turn right to a heading of 93 degrees magnetic. Is that clear?
I think so.
You think so? You've got to know so. When you hear nothing but a tone, when there's nothing but a loud buzz in your ears, I want you to turn right to 93 degrees on your compass. Do you understand me?
Yes, I understand. Turn right to 93 degrees on the compass when I hear a loud tone.
That's correct.
The tone is strong now. I don't hear the other signal. Nothing but the tone. Shall I?
Yes, turn right. Turn to 93 degrees and advise.
Advise?
Advise when on course, when on 93 degrees, advise.
Roger. Advise when on... I'm on course now, on 93.
All right, good.
Spiral Control Center has everything cleared on the 6,000. They're monitoring the calls, too.
Okay, Mike, thanks a lot. What's the time?
9:40, straight up.
9:40? That's 12 minutes to make it in. Hello, 457. You're approaching the range now. You're almost over the station. The range is about 2 miles from where I'm sitting. The signal you hear will continue to increase in volume until you cross the range. At that time, it will fade out quickly. For a moment, you may hear nothing. Then, it will increase again rapidly. Now, at the very instant your signal fades, I want you to make an immediate left turn to a heading of 45 degrees magnetic. Take that heading and advise. Understand?
I understand.
Mike, get on the phone and alert the local police and fire departments. Tell them what we've got and to be on the lookout for a fast move.
Roger.
Get all the lights on in the field, the runway markers. When we get him down through this, he won't have any time to spend looking for the field.
Okay, will do.
That is, if we get him down through it. You light another cigarette and you watch the clock on the desk. You try to keep your mind clear, to think ahead, to think of everything that can possibly happen, and the waiting is worse than anything yet. You keep reaching for that microphone, wanting to call him to ask him why he doesn't tell you he's over the range. And you know he hasn't called you because he isn't over the range yet. And you wait, and you wait. And then it comes loud and clear.
Rockford! Rockford! I'm over the range and starting a turn. It's just like you said. It's exactly the way you said it would be.
Roger, 457. You're doing fine. Now come left to 45, straight and level. Hold it until I tell you different. I'll call you back.
I think you got him, Ken.
Well, if he's where he ought to be, we should hear him in about 20 seconds. I'm going out the platform and listen. Call me if he calls in.
Okay.
You stand on the steel grating of that tower platform and you try to hear over the sounds from the field below. You strain your ears for a sound that should come to you out of the southwest. And you've never wanted to hear anything so much in your life. And then you hold your breath. You stop breathing to hear better. And it's there. A single engine singing a quiet, sweet sound and approaching directly on course. You flick your burning cigarette out into the black space and stumble back into the tower room. You grab the mic and you almost shout into it. 457, 457, this is Rockford. You're over the field. I hear you clearly. start a 360 turn immediately and orbit in your present area.
Beginning a 360. For God's sake, tell me what to do. This engine is ready to quit.
You snap a look at the clock. 9:46. 5, maybe 6 minutes more if you're lucky. 6 minutes. At the outside to get him lined up properly for a straight-in approach. To talk him down through 4,000 feet of solid cloud. 6 minutes to bring off a miracle. You waste 15 precious seconds debating the best way to do it. All along up to now, you've planned it this way. A good, steady, full-scale power approach. Nose up a little, flaps down just enough. Power on exactly right. Your mind has told you that this was the ticket, the only answer. With a good steady airplane, no turbulence to speak of, well-trimmed and hands-off, he might just make it. He might. But suddenly, you're not sure. Maybe if he could pull his power, slow her down, trim her slow and steady, a touch of flap, that might be the answer. That might do it. It would save precious gas if he missed his approach or he goofed up in the clouds and he could get back on top for another try. Maybe. You push the microphone button hard and try to sound calm. 457, I hear you plainly. You're circling the airport. There isn't time to talk this out. You'll have to do exactly what I tell you the first time and do it right. There simply isn't time enough. Oh, wait a minute. Do you have chutes? Do you have parachutes aboard?
No parachutes.
All right, 457, we'll have to do it this way. Now listen to what I have to say. You don't have to talk. Just listen. Come around to a due west heading, due west. As you do, start slowing her down. Slow her down and trim her up for a power approach. A normal power approach, do you understand?
I understand.
Don't talk to me. Bring her around, head west, with the power on. Slow her down, flaps down to approach position. Trim her up, make her steady. Advise when you're headed west and slow down. 10, 15, 20. Where is it? Where is 85? 457, are you there? 457?
I'm trying to get her steady. I'm trying to do what you told me.
All right, 457, don't talk. Advise when on course.
Rockford, I'm on 270 now. Slowing down. I don't know.
I know you don't know. All we can do is try.
I understand. I'm down to 80 now. Flaps down and power on.
Roger. Continue trimming her. Trim her down good. Adjust your power and trim her until she's descending at a steady 500 feet per minute. That's 500 per minute. Trim her good, do you understand? Trim her so good that she will let down at 500 feet per minute with your hands off. You get that? With your hands off.
I understand.
Now, 457, you're going to bring her around very slowly and precisely to an east heading. You're going to handle her very gently so she won't fall off on you flying so slow. You hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Let her continue to settle at 500 feet a minute. Just bring her around slowly to the east, recover, and then take your hands off the controls.
She won't fly with my hands off.
She will fly. She'll fly better than you can. Now listen to me. When you are eastbound, hands off. She will descend slowly into the clouds. After you're in the clouds, do not touch the controls. Then don't think, do as I tell you. Now, when you get in the clouds, everything will change for you. You will think the airplane is all wrong, that it's doing everything that it shouldn't do. If you leave it alone, it will start a slow spiral to the left, but I don't think it'll be enough to do any harm until you've broken out under the ceiling. Now, whatever it does, you will think it's going to the right or up or down or even spinning. But it won't be doing any of those things unless you make it do them. Now, don't touch it. Now, are you eastbound?
I'm eastbound, yes.
Take your hands off the control.
But I...
Take your hands off now.
Okay. Hands are off.
Now let her have it. Let her fly herself.
Ken, the ceiling's under 600 feet. That doesn't give him much time to recover and get his bearings when he breaks out.
Oh, but it's all we can do. It's all anybody can do. You sit there waiting, only too aware of what can be happening in the cabin of Beechcraft 457. Sweating out each second of time with a terrified pilot and his deathly scared kid. You wonder if this man, this stranger, and yet no longer a stranger, can keep his fantasies under control for that long letdown. The lonely, long letdown through total darkness with nothing but a great fear for a companion. A minute goes by, and another, and then... Get off those controls. Cut the throttle.
I've got the throttle closed. She's slowing down fast. I can't see. I can't.
Well, she's going to stall. Give her the throttle. Slowly. Keep your hands off except the throttle. She'll climb back out on top if you keep your hands off her. Minutes wasted, more than 2 minutes, because he couldn't believe what you told him. You had him and then you lost him. And now, if the teacup of gas still in his tank holds out, if he gets back on top, you still have it to do all over again. You begin to feel the long night closing in on you. He's almost calm when he calls you back this time. You can almost hear his sigh of relief.
Hello, Rockford. I'm back on top now.
Good. Maybe we have time for one more try. Now, let's try it with the power off this time. You may lose your engine before you can
it's
get...
It's no use, Rockford. It's just no use. I can't do it. I was fine until I got into those clouds. I just couldn't sit there and do nothing. I just couldn't. I know I can't do it again.
Listen, there's time. There's time for another try.
Forget it. The engine just quit. That's it, Rockford.
Well, you can still do it.
Forget it. You're wasting your time. I just want to say thanks for trying.
Hello, 457. Hello. Hello, Beach. Hello, 457.
Can't hear you. Hands close to the mic.
Yeah. You better hit the crash button.
Roger.
The Rockford Tower to all planes awaiting landing instructions. The emergency is over. Normal radio procedure is now in effect. Rockford, over and out.
Rockford Radio, Delta 216.
WA-70, request to...
Lovejoy, starred in The Long Night, adapted by Sam Pierce from the Atlantic Monthly story by Lowell D. Blanton. Listen. Listen again next week when radio's outstanding theater of thrills brings you another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Suspense is produced and directed in Hollywood by William N. Robeson. Included in tonight's cast were Stacey Harris, Byron Kane, Court Falkenberg, Sam Pierce, and Jack Crucian. The original musical score was composed and conducted by Paul Barron. Sound patterns by Ray Kemper and Bill James.
Ooh, kids, wasn't that scary, huh? It's got to be one of the most frightening stories ever told over the air, huh? In fact, I heard they were going to make that into an airport movie, but it required too many props, huh? Not to mention human costs. You know, they auditioned 100 air traffic controllers to handle that plane. It took them that many to find someone who would turn it down, huh? They finally picked someone who had never been hired because he couldn't land a job. But he had lots of courage, and that's more important. After all, it takes a lot of nerve to crash a party of two, huh? For the pilot, they advertised for someone with zero experience but a bad altitude, huh? And then the poor sucker they got, he had really been seduced. He had been picked up by one of their flyers. But you know, they then deliberately mistreated him, or should I say mistrained him. They found this cross-eyed instructor who never could control his pupils. Well, with all those violations, I wasn't surprised when they suspended them until they could straighten up and fly right. But enough of the history and back to the story. I have but one question. How could his hand be frozen to the mic when he was burnt to a crisp, huh? I mean, isn't that why he was so desperately searching for hangers? He wanted to roast his marshmallows? Which reminds me of another airplane question someone once asked me. They said, had I heard of the lady who backed him to the propeller? You said it. Disaster. But now it's time to usher in the weird circle with Paul of the House of Usher. So scary!
The Weird Circle. In this cave by the restless sea, we are met to call from out of the past stories, strange and weird. Bellkeeper, toll the bell, so that all may know we are gathered again in the Weird Circle.
History of the House of Usher. I am leaving it as my last will and testament, because before this year is over, the cavernous tarn will close over the gables of our decadent home. It was written by our ancestors many years ago that when the rains are blood red, the House of Usher will crumble to the earth. There are three members of the Usher family living, two in direct descent, the Lady Madeline and her twin brother Roderick. I was engaged to marry Roderick long before I knew my cousin. It is the custom for the Usher family to intermarry. The Lady Madeline has been confined to bed these many weeks, waiting for death, waiting for the last days of her life to pass quietly.
I've so little time left, Roderick. I must see Charles before I die.
Charles Wilson is tied up in London on business. He can't come down here every time you've a whim to see him.
Oh, this is no whim. It's just a matter of days before I... Don't be impatient with me.
Sister, please.
Oh, afraid of the truth, Roderick? You've always been afraid of me. I can read your mind so easily. Look at me, brother.
Let's not argue again.
You've always wanted me to die. You've waited for it year after year, praying and hoping that I die, leaving you free to inherit the house and the fortune. But you'll be fooled. Look. Look at the rain.
This isn't you speaking, it's the fever.
Fever or not, the rain is turning red, isn't it?
Yes, it seems that way at times.
Each day it will be redder and redder. and darker and...
Madeline.
Afraid, brother? Are you afraid of blood-red rains?
The doctor said you should have rest and quiet. You weaken yourself when you're excited.
Where's Dina?
I don't know. I'm not her keeper. She's downstairs, probably buried in that romantic nonsense that she reads.
Every girl likes to read romantic stories, Rod. Heaven help her when she becomes your wife. Call her for me, will you?
The doctor's orders were that you're not to be disturbed.
Call her, Rod. Do as I say.
For your own good,
I'll get even with you someday. Dina. Dina. Dina.
Madeline.
Dina.
Did you call me Lady Madeline?
Yes, Dina Child. Come here, my dear.
Is there something I can do for you?
Yes. I want to see Charles Wilson before I die.
I told you he was busy, Maddie.
Tell Talbot to hitch up the coach and four, Dina. Go to London tonight. Tell Charles I must see him right away. Bring him back with you.
I'll not have Dina go out in this weather.
But Roderick...
Dina, please go. Don't listen to Rod. Do this for me.
I will not have strangers dragged into our family secrets.
Charles Wilson is no stranger. He's the only one who knows the secret of the House of Usher.
I don't like leaving you, cousin.
The doctor will be here shortly. Hurry, my dear, and bring Charles back.
I forbid it, Dina.
If I don't see Charles tonight, I'll be buried alive. Not able to live. Not able to die.
Here. We'll never get through to London tonight, Mum. Not in this weather. Not in a million years. It ain't a night for humans to be a bat.
The Lady Madeline is dying. The least we can do is grant her last wish.
Dina! Dina!
Quickly, Talbot, before Lord Rick tries to catch up with us.
Dina, did you hear me call you?
Yes, I heard you, cousin.
Try to protect you, child, because I love you. I don't want any harm to come to my future wife.
Please, Roderick.
Why do you turn from me when I touch you?
I don't know.
Afraid of me?
I...
Answer me, Dina. Are you afraid of me?
Yes.
But you loved me once.
That was before we returned to the House of Usher.
And you're going anyway?
Yes, Roderick. For Madeline's sake.
Are you ready, Mum?
Yes. Yes, Talbot, ready. We'll be back by midnight, Roderick.
Hurry, cousin. Or else the Lady Madeline might not live long enough to get her last wish.
Did she leave, Roderick?
Yes. Madeline, why don't you confide in me? Why must you call in strangers when you know how it humiliates me?
I can't trust you, Roderick.
Ever since we were children, you've kept one secret from me. What is that secret, Madeline?
That's one thing you'll never wheedle out of me.
What is that secret, Maddie?
Leave me alone, brother. I'm ill.
You're dying, Madeline. You know you're dying. A secret won't do you any good. Now, what is it?
Please, Roderick.
Tell me, Madeline, or you won't live to die the way you think you will. Tell me, or by heaven, I'll force it out of you.
Oh, whoa there, whoa boy. This is his house, Mum.
Thank you, Talbot. Mr. Wilson, is he here?
Yes, I... Why, Dina Usher, what are you doing in London at this hour of the night? Come in, my dear.
The Lady Madeline sent me.
Great heavens, child, your clothes are drenched. Come on in. I'll fix you some hot tea.
Oh, we haven't time, Charles. Madeline wants to see you at once. Please come with me, right away. The doctor doesn't think she'll live through the night.
Madeline? Dying?
Oh, she's been ill for months. Charles, you wouldn't know her anymore.
Why didn't you let me know before this?
Roderick wouldn't let me.
Roderick? But why?
I can't explain now, Charles. Believe me when I say it's important that you come at once. Talbot's waiting outside. I'm frightened for Madeline. We've got to be back by midnight.
You came in time, Doctor.
Lady Usher, you shouldn't allow your brother to excite you.
There's a cruel streak in him at times. Surprisingly like my grandfather. What time is it?
Midnight. Here, drink this. It will give you strength.
I can't move.
Lean against me. There.
Dr. Bain, you've attended all my family, haven't you?
Yes, Lady Usher.
You've been closer to us than almost anyone. If I ask you for an honest answer, would you give it to me?
That depends on the question.
How much longer have I to live?
Years, my dear.
No, Doctor. I want an honest answer, please. It's imperative that I know.
I don't know, really, my dear.
Hurry, Talbot. Please hurry.
I'm going as fast as the horses can go, Mum. Giddy up. Giddy up.
Faster, Talbot.
We won't accomplish anything at all if you lose self-control, Dina.
Oh, I'm sorry, Charles, but I've the most dreadful foreboding.
Foreboding? Well, I thought Madeline and Roderick were as close as brother and sister could possibly be.
They were until about a year ago.
What caused the change?
Well, I've been living at the house of Usher for about 4 months, and Roderick suddenly became, well, nervous, jumpy. He'd locked himself up in his room for days. He was morbid, frightfully morbid.
Sounds like a depression of spirit.
Oh, it went deeper than that. Madeline fell ill at the same time. And then the horrible reddish rains began to fall.
Red rain? Dina, really?
Oh, you'll see. The first day those rains began to fall, the rift between Madden and Roderick widened. Until now, their hate is a living thing. It fills the house. They seem to be battling constantly for possession of each other's soul. Charles, look. Look ahead. There's the house. And the rain. Look at the rain.
Yes. Red rain. Well, Charles, do come in. We've been waiting for you.
Oh, it's good to see you again, Roderick.
Come in, Dina. Don't stand there staring at me.
It's been a long time since I've last seen you, Rod.
Yes, a long time.
Let me take your coat, Charles. I'll hang it up.
Thank you, dear.
My sister's waiting, Charles. You'd better go right up.
Yes, of course.
I'd better warn you. Madeline's delirious. She doesn't quite know what she's saying.
Rod, why don't you come up with me?
She expressed a desire to see you alone.
Charles. Oh, Charles, I'm so glad you came. I had to see you alone.
Madeline, don't try to sit up. You'll only weaken yourself.
Sit over here, Charles, next to me. You're the only person I can trust, and you must promise to do exactly as I say.
Of course, of course.
Oh, remember what I told you years ago. Remember about Roderick and me. I told you then that he and I were more than twins.
Well, that was just childish fancy.
Oh, I wish to God it were. But those suspicions have all been proven these last few months. Roderick and I are only one person. Not two. We have two earthly bodies, but we share one soul. When Charles and I were born, our shoulders were attached. The day of our birth, we were separated.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean you share one soul.
I've never been able to feel anything for myself. His thoughts are my thoughts. His tears are my tears. His weaknesses are mine. Don't you understand, Charles?
Are you sure of this, Madeline?
Positive. His mind has the initiative. He doesn't respond to my emotions. Because I had none. None. I'm cold without him. Don't you see? My earthly body is wasting away. But my soul is not my own. As long as he's alive, Charles, the power of his life will keep me living.
Madeline, Lady Madeline, you mustn't even think of it.
Oh, it's true, though. I'll have a living death. I'll be buried alive. Unable to live. Unable to die.
Madeline.
That's why I called you here. Promise me now, Charles. You'll never allow my coffin to be sealed. Keep my body in this house.
You must rest. Madeline, stop talking.
Do you promise, Charles? Promise.
Yes, yes, of course I do.
Don't tell Roderick, Charles, ever. He'll seal me in my tomb alive.
Madeline, my dear.
Every mortal is entitled to his own soul.
If I can't rest in death... If I can't rest in death, I'll return from the grave and take him with me.
My promise is my word.
What are you doing standing outside this door, Roderick?
Dina.
Neither not see Charles in privacy. Why do you insist on spying on your own sister?
Shut up.
I can't understand you, Roderick.
There are many things you can't understand, Dina. Come with me downstairs.
Let me go.
Come along to the living room.
I'd like to go in and tell Madeline that you were spying on her again.
Tell her if you wish. She's a poor, sick thing. Unable to lift her arm against me.
I don't know how I ever loved you.
You'll learn to again after we're married.
I hate you, Roderick Usher. I'll never marry you.
In heaven's name!
Roderick! Roderick, what's the matter?
Pain inside me, crawling like vermin. Help me, Dina.
Oh, of course.
Help me.
Roderick! Dina! It's Madeline! She's dead!
I am, Madeline, beside your bed. And you're dead, Madeline. Dead. Two people fought for the possession of one soul, and you've lost. You'll try to drag me to the grave with you, but you're weaker than I, Madeline. You'll never return. Never.
And that was her last request, Doctor.
It's a peculiar request, Mr. Wilson.
I know it is, Doctor, but it was the Lady Madeline's last wish. Oh, Roderick. What are you doing here?
Taking a last look at my beloved sister's face.
Oh. Doctor, I'm not quite sure that the Lady Madeline is dead. Look at the flush of life in her cheeks.
Stop speaking like a fool, Charles.
Look for yourself, Roderick.
What are you trying to do, frighten me?
No. I've asked the doctor to verify her death.
In cases of this kind, Mr. Wilson, death from catalepsy, the deceased often retains a lifelike flush. But it's merely symptomatic. Nothing supernatural about it.
Of course she's dead. Isn't she, Doctor?
However, if you feel the slightest doubt...
No doubt at all.
I'd suggest delaying the burial for a week or two.
As her nearest of kin, I want the funeral held at once. She'll be laid to rest in the family catacombs beneath the house.
Roderick, I gave her my word.
Your word isn't valid. You're not one of the family.
But it was my word of honor.
Don't mix in family affairs, Charles.
But the least you can do is grant her last wish, Roderick.
This is nonsense. The dead are best buried.
But, Rod, your own sister...
No!
As the doctor in the case, I don't feel justified in making out a death certificate for 2 weeks. The Lady Madeline will lie in state in her coffin in the catacombs. The coffin will remain open.
For 30 years, these catacombs have been unused. Look at the walls, Dina. Time has encrusted them with nitre.
It's cold in here. Cold and damp.
Let's take the coffin this way, Talbot. Watch out, Charles. Don't fall. Be careful. The catacombs have always been soft with slime and nitre. Hard to breathe in here at times, isn't it?
Where's the room, Roderick?
Ahead. At the end of the corridor.
Are you positive we can keep a fire burning in there?
Yes, Charles. Talbot.
Yes, sir.
Did you start the fire?
Oh, yes, sir. I did that early this morning. The room ought to be warm by now, sir.
Talbot's a dependable man. He starts warm fires to bring life to death.
Roderick, how can you act like that? Your own sister.
Yes, my own dear, beloved sister. There, Charles. Look ahead of you. A tiny room at the end of a corridor. The fire is blazing.
Careful. Careful with the casket. We'll place it on the table. Center of the room.
All right, sir. We can place it down.
Yes,
yes, Top. Down there.
I know that my regime will live.
Rest in peace.
And that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though this body be destroyed, yet shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not as a stranger. We brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. The Lord giveth, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Yes, ma'am.
Why, Mum, what are you doing up at this hour of the night?
I can't sleep. I keep dreaming that Lady Madeline is crying for help. Where's Lord Roderick?
Oh, he couldn't sleep either, Mum. He said he was worried that his sister was cold, Mum. Whatever does he mean by that?
Did he go down to the catacombs?
Yes, Mum, that he did. He said he wanted to stir the fires a bit.
Down there?
Wait a minute, Mum.
Later, Talbot. I must stop him. I must.
I wouldn't go down there, Mum. It's ever so cold at night and damp. I wouldn't go down there myself. I advised Lord Roderick against him, Mum. I did. I told
Roderick! The door. The door slammed shut. It's so dark in here. Cold and dark. Roderick, where are you? Rod, answer me. Roderick, I can't see. Please help me. I'll get lost in the catacombs. Roderick, please.
I don't like these goings on at all, I don't. People dying and not getting themselves properly buried. It ain't normal. No, that it ain't.
Talbot.
What are you up to, Mr. Wilson? Don't nobody sleep proper in this here house?
Where are Miss Dina and Lord Roderick Talbot?
Well, I was sitting here as nice as you please, sir.
But where is Miss Dina Talbot?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm getting to. I was drinking this here cup of tea when Lord Roderick comes in a little past midnight. Or was it a little before midnight?
Where is he?
Well, I'm getting to that. He comes in and he says he does. He wants a flame.
Yes?
Yeah. He says, as calm as you please, he wants to go down and keep his sister from getting cold.
And Miss Dina?
Well, as for her, she came down a little later and said she dreamt that the Lady Madeline was calling to her. So she follows Lord Roderick to the catacombs. It ain't proper, sir. It ain't proper.
Roderick! Oh, there's the light. There.
Are you calling me, cousin?
Oh, Roderick, I was so frightened. I thought I was lost.
Why did you come down here?
I dreamt Madeline needed me. Well, what did you do, Rod?
Be quiet, Dina.
You closed the coffin. Oh, how could you?
Don't you approve?
You were going to drive a stake through her coffin.
She was a witch, Dina. A witch. Isn't it the custom to drive a stake through the heart of a witch? Watch, Dina. Watch.
No.
Watch me drive the hammer through her heart.
Stop, Rod. Stop that.
Why?
Roderick, put that stake down in heaven's name. Don't. Leave it alone.
Take your hands off.
Oh, please, Roderick. Please. It's so horrible. Don't you understand? It's your own sister. Your own sister.
You'll pay for this, Dina. You and Madeline together.
Oh, Roderick.
Calvin, help me with him.
Yes, sir.
Pardon me, Lord Roderick, but...
Oh, Charles, darling. You came just in time.
He looks like he was dead, sir. Lying there on the sofa.
No. No, he's beginning to stir.
Keep bathing his face in cool water, dear. He'll be all right. I'm afraid the shock of Madeline's death is too much for him.
The shock of her death and the constant fall of the rain. It's getting redder all the time, Charles.
Yes, it is. That's just an electric phenomenon.
Don't try to move, Roderick.
It's you, Dina. You again.
Lie still, cousin. You'll feel better in a little while.
You're both fools. You shouldn't have stopped me.
She's a witch. Don't you understand?
No, no, Roderick.
Listen. Listen, Charles.
What?
Can't you hear it?
What are you talking about?
Listen. I told you once my hearing was super acute. I can hear a heart beating.
You're overwrought. Suppose I go for the doctor, Rod. He'll give you a sedative.
No. No, don't leave me.
But you need your sleep.
No. Of course you do. All this horror tonight will pass over when the morning comes. And those infernal rains clear.
It's not in my mind. She's coming. She's coming for me. I can hear her in the catacombs. Listen, Charles, listen.
Roderick, please believe me that you're simply overwrought and emotional.
I've got to get out of here. I must leave at once. She's coming for me. Coming. She swore she would. I know she did. I overheard her talk with you, Charles.
Roderick.
Cousin, no, you're hearing things.
Now, listen.
I can't hear anything.
She's leaving the catacombs now. Listen, Charles, don't you hear her breathing? Can't you hear her footsteps? Her sighs? She's in the hallway, Charles. In the hall. Help me, Charles. Help me, Charles.
Roderick.
She's coming closer. Faster. Faster. Her feet are on the stairs. One by one, she's coming up those stairs. Listen, you can hear her now, can't you? You can hear her now.
Charles, look out the window. The rains are blood red.
She's outside the door. Listen. Listen, cousin, listen.
Madeline!
No, sister. No.
Leave the house of Usher, Charles. You and Dina, leave this cursed house at once. The rains are blood red. And I've come to reclaim my soul.
Adeline.
No. No. And you, Roderick, you will be soulless forever.
From that chamber and from that mansion, Charles and I fled aghast. The storm was still abroad in all its wrath. As we crossed the park to the highway, the moon above the house of Usher was blood red. And Charles held me close as we walked on and on into the night.
Dina, my darling, don't look back. The house has crumbled to the ground, crumbled into the cavernous tiles.
Charles.
Little Dina. You'll always be safe with me.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have heard another immortal tale in The Weird Circle. Bellkeeper, toll the bell. Be here in this lonely cave by the restless sea once again next time for another immortal tale in The Weird Circle.
The Weird Circle is distributed exclusively by Nostalgia Broadcasting Corporation, Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Ooh, kids, that was scary, wasn't it, huh? Having to marry your own sister, that scared me, huh? Personally, though, I think those two should have been separated much the same way they were as kids. How about you, huh? I've heard the bosom buddies, but shoulder twins? Really? And what about that Roderick? He should have been a shoemaker, the way he got his kicks being a heel to his sister's soul, huh? No wonder she gave him the boot, huh? Now, me, I identified with his sister, actually. I mean, the coming back after death, the unsealed casket, the fear of the stake through the heart. But I wouldn't have bothered with the brother. I would have made a beeline to the red rain. Really? I mean, I would have gathered from the gutters and I would have licked the shingles dry. It's not often you get free drinks on the house, huh? And speaking of drinks, that brings us to our next story. The Log of the Evening Star. It's about the captain that likes to drown his woes in drink. The only problem is the drink is seawater and woe is the crew, huh? Take it away, Suspense Suspense!
have shipped aboard a fast sea schooner with a ghost of its dead captain in command. A ghost who shoots guns, resurrects the dead, creates a terror from which you cannot escape. Escape, produced and directed by William M. Yorkson, and designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Tonight we escape across the limitless horizons of the South Sea in Alfred Noyes' version of the classic legend of Blue Water, The Log of the Evening Star. June 19th. The sailing schooner Evening Star, reported missing since the 1st of April, today was discovered 100 miles west of here, drifting about in a dead calm, with all sails set, but not a soul on board. The ship, when found, was well stocked with food and water, and all three of her small boats were still present. The sun-baked body of the ship's cap was lying in the bow, and the mess table in the crew's quarters had been laid in preparation for a meal, which was never served. Otherwise, everything aboard seemed to be in order, and no solution can be offered to explain the whereabouts of the 12 persons who sailed on her from San Francisco. It appears that the fate of the Evening Star will remain permanently one of the weird and unsolved mysteries of the sea. My name is Harper. I'm first mate of the South Sea schooner, Evening Star. I'm writing it because I believe it's my duty to make some record of the terrible things which have just occurred. Events I can't possibly enter in the ship's log. I can't, of course, be certain if the count will ever come to light, because I'm not likely to live another 24 hours. I guess I should have been able to see it 3 weeks ago, on the day we sailed from San Francisco, but I didn't. I remember I was standing on the deck of the Evening Star, talking to Cato, the cook, while we waited for Captain Burgess to come aboard. We were due to sail in a half hour.
Where are you being crinkled on this ship, Mr. Harper?
Oh, I don't know, Cato. Martinique first, then Tahiti, maybe on Australia.
It's good to report. It's better on open sea.
You said it.
You seem very safe this trip without Captain Taylor.
Yeah. We've had the same journey together for over 2 years. And Kanaka, and the crew, you and I and Burgess, very well. Hard to believe he's been dead 4 months now.
Captain Taylor was a proud man. Was good captain. Mm-hmm. He's too bad he died.
Yeah. Well, Burgess will make a good skipper, too. You've already his first mate.
Why did you come on board yet?
Captain Burgess? I don't know. Just can't bear to leave that new bride here, I guess.
You have seen her, Mr. Harper? You know her, maybe?
Yeah, no, I haven't. She's been staying down the coast somewhere ever since he got married a couple weeks ago. I don't even know who she is.
Your wife, you come on, who's a man?
Tito, I got a strong hunch you're a sentimentalist down on your knee.
It's possible, Mr. Harper. It has been said.
Tito. There's Burgess now, coming down the pier.
Is somebody waiting, too?
Yeah. Guess he's come down to see him off, huh? At least we'll get a chance. Now,
that's Mrs. Dale, huh? Maybe she go on ship, too, just like old time.
No, no, no. She wouldn't want to sail on the ship her husband died on. I wonder... No.
Mr. Harper, look. She's being a fly around the back.
Yeah. I see him, Peter.
He's really bad guy.
Really, Bob?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that. I'm gonna...
Ah, Bruce, everything about her?
All right, Captain Bridges. We can sail anytime you want. How are you, Miss Dale?
I got that.
Very well. Oh. Good. Mr. Harper, even though you're already acquainted with the lady, I'd like to present my wife. Your wife?
You were married 2 weeks ago, Mr. Harper. I'm staying with you on this trip.
Oh, that's fine. I'm glad to have you aboard, Mrs. Dale. Burgess, I mean. Well, it'll be like old times. Old times, Mr. Harper. I mean, all of us together and everything. Now, congratulations to both of you.
Thank you, Mr. Harper. And look, I've got Satan along, too. He wouldn't miss his trip for anything.
Yeah, he's right enough. How are you, Satan? Would you like to look over the chance papers, Captain Buggy? I got them right here. No, thank you, Mr. Harper. I was soon there, Mother. They'll sail as soon as Mrs. Dale... As soon as my wife's trunk comes aboard. Yes, sir. I'll be in the cabin if you want to be.
Clodagh, would you know certain I'm getting something to eat? I think she's hungry. Yes, Missy. I'm busy right now. Hello! Come on, Kitty. You're going fast, baby. Well, Mr. Harper, we're all together again.
That's right, Miss Buggy. You've even got Satan on board.
Yes. All of us. Except my husband.
Your husband is down in the cabin, Mrs. Buggy. You mean we're all here except Captain Daywell. One got it, too. Things straighten out a little, the way they always do. After a while, they got so we could think of her as Mrs. Burgess, instead of Mrs. Dalewell. After that, it wasn't so awkward. Captain Burgess stayed to himself quite a bit. But all in all, it was a fairly pleasant 2 weeks. Up until yesterday afternoon. I was standing in the bow, smoking, watching a school of dolphins dip out of the water when Mrs. Burgess came up behind me.
Mr. Harper, I wonder if I could speak to you a moment.
Of course, Miss Burgess.
I'm terribly frightened.
You're frightened? What about?
Is he around anywhere?
Who around?
My husband. I don't want him to hear me.
What? Now, Mrs. Burgess, I can't listen.
No, please. You're the only one I can turn to. You're always terribly dangerous, you know.
Dangerous? What are you talking about?
Mr. Harper, do you have any reason to think my husband may be not quite himself?
Not quite himself? In what way?
Do you think he may be...
Of course not.
But you don't understand.
I understand one thing, Mrs. Burgess. I better get back to my duty.
I quite agree with you, Mr. Harper.
Captain Burgess.
I believe you really should stay in the cabin, my dear. It's far too windy for you up here in the bow.
Yes. I was just going. I mean, I'm going right now.
He has a rather delicate cloak, Mr. Harper. Catches cold easily. It's me singing, you know.
Yes, yes, I know.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course you do. Well, don't pay too much attention to anything my wife might say, Mr. Harper. She's upset. Just don't pay any attention to her.
Something was wrong, all right. No question of that. I couldn't figure what. I couldn't think of any terrible danger. It seemed more than likely it was Mrs. Burgess who was not quite herself. Well, anyway, the whole business didn't make much sense, so I shrugged it off and forgot about it for a couple of hours. Just at dusk, most of the crew was below deck. I was sitting on the after hatch, scratching the ears of Satan and the ship's cap. The sun was just dropping past the horizon, Satan purring, meowing. Everything was pretty peaceful. Until I heard those voices coming from Captain Burgess' cabin.
No,
it wasn't a matter of eavesdropping. They'd even forgotten anyone might hear them.
Get on the plane.
I mean it all right.
Then you don't care about
If you were alive, I'd still be with him.
You can say that when you know about the thing that I'm about with
him. It's your imagination, I told you that.
Imagination, then. About your own Harper. Is this?
No!
Yes, Mr. Harper. What is it? I wondered if you wanted Tito to bring the dinner here to the cabin, sir. No, Mr. Harper. I'll leave it to you. You're going out now. Come and bring it up right away. All right, Captain Buggy.
Nothing else, Captain. Feeling that something deadly was stirring itself here, coming awake below deck. The first night shadows were bringing a terrible, sucking tightness. Something I screamed to keep them laughing, but there was nothing to laugh about. I was quite certain that if I hadn't knocked on that door, Captain Burgess would have killed his wife. But why? Well, I hadn't found any sensible answer by the time Tito brought a tray of food to my cabin.
Good evening, Mr. Harper.
Put it there on the side table, will you?
Thank you, Mr. Harper.
How's it look on deck, Tito?
On deck? I do not understand you, Mr. Harper.
I mean, well, is it dark yet?
Yes, it's dark soon, I think. And I think, too, tonight is not good night.
What do you mean by that?
He said something bad on board ship, Mr. Harper. I don't understand what. I don't see it. I don't hear it. But inside, I sense it all the time. Grow bigger.
I like the imagination, too.
Is the imagination bother you too, Mr. Harper? This morning, three birds fly over ship together. Oh, dear, I was much interested. But then, tonight, three birds fly over ship together.
Yeah, what about it?
It's a sign of death, Mr. Harper. Tonight on the ship, somebody dies. You like something else, Teddy?
No. Okay, though, that's all.
Thank you, Mr. Harper. Good night,
me. Oh. I wasn't the only one on board who was feeling something was wrong. I wondered if Tito knew any more of what was back of a Gunnagian. You couldn't tell by looking at him. He'd be busting with joy or scared half to death. And that face of his would never show either one. Anyway, 10 minutes later, I was out on the dark sandhill, watching the moon cast shadows in the irregular. After a while, I heard her calling my name.
Mr. Harper!
Here I am, Miss Briggs.
Oh,
what's happening?
I don't know. Did he come back to the
house? All right. I suppose you tell me what it's all about and talk fast.
I don't know what it's about, Mr. Harper, not really. I only know that my husband has gone insane.
Hey, you told me that earlier. I think you think so.
He tried to kill me.
Yes, I know. Why?
Because of last night. He came into my cabin, he opened up. He was trembling, why did he see?
And why?
He said he'd just seen Captain Daywell on deck.
Daywell, but he...
Yes, he died 4 months ago. I told him he imagined it. But he's talking about it. He says Captain Daywell has come back to punish us.
Punish you? For what?
Yes, but not waiting longer to get married. Oh, we've got to be...
Well, if I use force, Mr. Burgess, it's the same as mutiny.
But he didn't tell me, he did everything.
That's right there. I don't know, but what...
Hey. There, by the moon.
It's very well.
There wasn't any doubt about it. The moonlight behind him threw his shadow toward us on the deck. And he had on that tall peaked cap and the white muffler he'd always worn when he was alive. He didn't move, didn't say anything. Just stood there, looking at us. Miss Burgess! Before I could stop him, Miss Burgess turned the rest of the rail and jumped overboard. One of the Tanaka saw, grabbed the life preserver, and went in after us. I ran to the longboat hanging in the davits at the port rail.
Well, what's happened, Mr. Hart?
I don't know. Let's get this boat in the water. Mrs. Burgess is overboard along with one of the boys. Do you see anything on deck?
I don't believe it.
Right, come on, move. Here, take the oars. The schooner's not got much steerage way, so it shouldn't be far astern. Come on, come on.
Somebody's sitting on deck.
All right, never mind. Keep going, will you? We'll find out about it later. We've got to pick up those kids before they go under. We didn't find them, though. The shooting on board stopped after a while. We rode around for a half hour or more. We couldn't find a trace of them. Finally, there wasn't anything else to do. So I told the Tanaka to call for the schooner. We were about 10 yards away from the side when...
Look.
I looked up at the rail, and there stood Daybell. He didn't say anything. Just stood there. He had a gun in his hand.
Daybell, what are you trying to do?
Dad, that don't work, Joe. We gotta get away from it.
Joe, I know.
We were drifting away from the side of the schooner. I saw a sharp pain in my shoulder with a bullet at hip. But the Kanaka was worse off. Blood was running down over his face from a hole in the center of his forehead. That's when I passed out. When I came to, it was broad daylight. The boat was lying. I was lying and was bumping up against the side of the schooner. The Captain Burgess was calling down on me from the rail.
Mr. Harper, are you alive?
I'm all right, Captain Burgess.
It's been a horrible night, Mr. Harper. It's all right now.
Hey, help me, boy, sir.
Yes. Can you lift up your arm?
Yes, sir. Here.
Easy now. Here you go. Give me a hand here. Move. Careful now. Pretty bad wound.
I'm weak. Yes, I lost a lot of blood. Sorry about your wife, sir. We couldn't find her.
I know. There's only three of us left alive on board now, Mr. Harper. You and I and Cato here.
What happened?
You may not believe it. It was Captain Dayrell.
Yes, I saw him.
Got a hold of the ship's guns and killed the whole crew. Locked me in the cabin while he did.
But he's dead, Captain Burgess. We buried him at sea 4 months ago.
No matter. He's come back now, Mr. Harper. This ship, the Evening Star, isn't he wanted?
No, it's not possible. A man is dead.
That's what his wife... I mean, my wife said when I told her I'd seen it, said I was crazy. I think she knows better now.
Maybe we could search the ship.
Cato and I went through the daylight this morning. We found nothing.
Well, there has to be some explanation.
There is. The wicked shall be punished for their sins.
What do you mean by that?
Nothing, Mr. Harper. Nothing at all. Well, I was his friend. Oh, I thought a lot of Captain Dayrell. You know that, don't you, Mr. Harper?
Yes, sir.
All right now in the daylight. But he'll come back tonight as soon as it's dark. It's only the three of us now to face him, Mr. Harper. Four, if you count Satan. And I'm thinking there's more than one Satan on board this ship.
Me to the bunk in my cabin and left me there. That was about noon today. I could tell by the look on Captain Burgess' face that, well, it was pretty certain I wasn't going to live. That's why I decided to write this account. Try to set down everything that happened. In a way, this is the real log of the Evening Star, even if it doesn't make much sense. Anyway, right after sundown, Peter brought me in a tray of food.
How you feel now, Mr. Harper?
Well, I guess not too bad, Peter.
You like something to eat, maybe?
Later, maybe. We can leave it there, huh?
Yes, but no, it's now. Later, I think we all dead.
Has anything happened yet?
It's not dark yet. When it's dark, then he comes.
Yeah. What's happening, buddy?
I don't see him. He's hiding somewhere, I think.
You know, all those who were killed last night, what happened to their bodies?
He's buried in his feet. This morning I helped Captain Burgess. You like something else, Biggie?
No, thanks, Kato.
Then I go burn much incense, make peace with many gods. For the last time now, I said, goodbye, please.
I lit the lamp over the bunk, and I lay there for a long time. I don't know how long. I didn't know where Captain Burgess and Kato were or what they were doing. I kept waiting to hear the sound of shooting. I kept lying there, dreading it. And then gradually, I began to realize that somebody was singing on board, way off. And I knew that voice. I heard it somewhere before, singing the same song. It was Mrs. Burgess. I hear it, Captain Burgess. What in the name of heaven is going on?
It's her. She's come back, too. She's in there with him now in the cabin.
Oh, that's impossible. She drowned last night. She's dead.
They're both dead. But they've come back. They're in the cabin now. And she's singing for him. She never sang for me, Mr. Harper, but now she's singing for him. Come, Mr. Harper, you've got to help me. I tell you, they're both in the cabin right now.
Yes, sir. I don't know.
Oh, you're a freak. I forgot. I'll go alone. I'll stop them somehow. I've got to stop them.
I pulled myself up in the bunk and I put my feet on the floor. Weak or not, one way or another, I had to get to that cabin. I managed to stagger outside onto the deck. Captain Burgess had disappeared somewhere. And there was no sign of anything moving there in the moonlight, except Satan the cat. Came up and rubbed against my ankle. The singing had stopped and the ship was quiet. I made my way forward and finally was looking through the skylight down into the captain's cabin. One lamp was lit. Its light fell on the hunched figure that strode about the cabin. Captain pulled down low, hand sunk in his pocket. All the old familiar gestures. It was Captain Gaywell, and he was alone. I crouched there with the skylight, shivering from the night wind and from the terror inside of me, watching that awful figure. After a while, it walked over and stood beside the phonograph. Then I realized where that voice had come from. Gabriel had always been crazy about his wife singing, and he'd made a lot of records of her voice. He was playing one of them now. Paced back and forth. I still couldn't figure it out. And then, for just a moment, the white muffler fell back from his throat, and for the first time, I saw Captain Daywell's face. I'm not sure how I managed to stumble back here to my cabin. I'm writing this now just as rapidly as I can. I may be interrupted at any minute. If that happens, I'll try to slip it behind the map here on the cabin wall in hopes that it may be... I can hear him coming now. Whoever may read this, please, try to get word to my family in San Francisco. Yes? Come in.
I thought you might be asleep, Mr. Harper.
How could anybody sleep, Captain Burgess, as long as Daywell's loose on board?
Yes, that's true, Mr. Harper. Should have seen him down there in the cabin. And her, too. He was walking up and down as proud as ever. And she was singing for him just like she used to. You should have seen him.
I did see him.
He never sang for me like that, not at... You saw him? Did he look that true? Just as always?
Captain Burgess, it was you I saw.
dressed up in Daylow's clothes that was stored in the sea chest there in the cabin.
Oh, no, Mr. Harper, you're mistaken. It was his spirit come back to punish us.
It was you all the time. You who fired those shots last night. You're insane.
That's what she said, too. That's because he told her.
Because of the truth.
Now he's been talking to you.
He talked to nobody. He's dead. And you've never seen him except in your own guilty conscience. Just what is that going to happen, my dear? Did you kill him?
Oh, no! Don't say that, Mr. Harper. I was his friend. I caught a lot of them, and Mrs. Daywell, too. Everybody knew we were friends. Did he tell you that?
You're completely mad.
Don't say that, Mr. Harper. I've got to save you from him. He talks to you, and you're weak, and you can't run away. I've got to save you.
Put on that gun.
Don't. I've got to go someplace where he can't find us, Mr. Harper. Go up deck. I'll take you, Mr. Harper. Come on. Don't worry. I'll save you from him. His ship, everything on it, he wants it back. We've got to give it to him, Mr. Harper. Got to let him have it. Got to get off the ship.
Captain Harper, it's you. Stay with him.
Go away.
It's you, Captain Diller. It's me, Kito.
You can't stop us, David. I'll throw you.
No.
You see, Mr. Harper, I killed him. Hey, now he can't stop us. There he is again. There by the mast. See you, Mr. Harper. He's coming this way. He won't stop. Got to get away. Got to save you, Mr. Harper. Here. Here's the rail. I'll help you. There. See? He's gone, Dana. Now it's just me. And I'm going too. You see, it's all yours now. The evening star, just like you wanted. No, no, don't stay back.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight brought to you The Log of the Evening Star by Alfred Noyes. Adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with Jack Webb as Harper, Alan Reed as Captain Burgess, Gail Page as Mrs. Burgess, Louis Van Rooten as Tato and the Cat, and Tito Kalzig as the Conica. Music is conceived and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Next week... When you're tired out from doing nothing all weekend, when Blue Monday stares you in the face, next week at this time, when your problems seem just too much for you, we offer you Escape. Next week, we bring you another exciting story of high adventure. Good night, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape.
Okay, that one was scary, huh? That was so scary, they should have turned that into a TV show called Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, huh? Even Jack Webb got wasted, but I suppose they can always recover him with Dragnet, huh? Really. He must have enjoyed the part, though. You could sure tell by the way he went overboard, huh? But seriously, I could tell from the start this story was going to end up in a lot of deaths. Or should I say, depths? Huh? I don't even know what it was, but as soon as they left port, I started to have this sinking feeling, huh? How about you? It all happened so fast, even the victims don't know what happened, but maybe once they hit bottom, they began to fathom why, huh? You know, one thing's for certain. They sure needed better life preservers. Iron-plated or something, huh? Actually, it's the wife I feel sorry for. No, she wouldn't sing for her husband, so he locked her up in Davy Jones' locker. You know, I guess he must have figured if he hadn't made her, at least he mermaid her. That way, if nothing else, he could at least sing more scales, huh? But really, I don't think she appreciated it very much. For instance, when she jumped into the ocean, you would think she'd wave. I mean, you'd expect her to say something like, I'll see you later, huh? But you have to give the captain credit. He fooled them all. Cook, line officer, and singer. Well, I've got to fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station. This is a count staying when you're on the ocean. Try not to be so sea gullible, huh?
Until next week.